burns. Sweat it out, wait my turn. And now I am here with Jim Mayfield. He's the founder and president of Subsea Systems, and he brought along his vice president of marketing, his daughter, Hannah DeBee, is in the house. How are you doing today?
Good. Thanks for having us.
I'm glad you are here. You are building some very interesting things right down the road. Jim, let's start with you. Give us an overview of the company. How did you get started, and what is it today?
Well, we started in 85, so it goes back a long time. And I had a partner, and we had a pursuit of developing products for the ocean. And at the time, it was to build a submarine for tourism.
A submarine.
Yeah, and we started, my father was an entrepreneur, so I came from that environment. And he developed products that my partner was selling and doing servicing in South Africa at the time. And so we sold that company in 1985. We had a little bit of money, and I'd been working with, his name is Patrick Stafford, what are we going to do? And we said, hey, let's pursue our dream. Let's build a submarine. So that's how the company started. It was kind of a crazy, just off-the-cuff pursuit. But
so build a submarine for the resort industry or for tourism of some kind?
Yeah, for tourism. Mm-hmm. I mean, I grew up diving and swimming competitively, so we're always in the water. And it was just kind of an extension of our passion, was to somehow find a way to share that. And to share it was to build a submarine. That was our original pursuit.
And now the company is building all kinds of products, and you've expanded in a way that's got you to bring in your daughter onto the team. Hannah is, tell us what your role is there in the company, because the company has obviously has changed a lot over the years.
Yeah.
You didn't start in the 80s, I can tell.
From the moment I was born, born into a family business. When I was a kid, they had regulator in my mouth in the bathtub, always in and around the
regulator.
Water.
Regulator. Most kids have a pacifier. You have, what's a regulator?
A scuba regulator.
Okay.
So, we had an air cylinder by the bathtub. We were playing with a scuba regulator when we were kids and just always in the business. So in high school, when I was planning my further education and eventual career, I always knew I wanted to go into the business, seeing what my dad did. It's so fun. Why wouldn't I want to be in a fun business? So that's what I pursued. I went to UC Davis, studied international relations, and then graduated and came to work for my dad.
Well,
Spanish. Well, you are a go-getter, and you're in charge of marketing. What does that mean? What are describe the products that you're marketing.
So we have a number of products. We've grown out of manufacturing the subs and semi-submersibles, and now our product line includes SeaTrek, which is kind of our flagship product. It's a helmet diving system. So we take non-divers, non-swimmers on a guided underwater walking tour. We do that all over the world. And then we have another product called Aquaticar. This is an underwater ride. So imagine driving a car on a track underwater.
Oh, my gosh.
And then we have, We have a fun cat that we build. This is a little solar electrically powered catamaran. So imagine a big chaise lounge floating on two pontoons with electric motors. You can tool around on that. It's a great beach rental product. And then we've also developed Clear Lounge. It's an underwater oxygen bar. So
taking
our SeaTrek helmet technology, and we basically made a human fish tank, and you're breathing oxygen underwater, playing games. We have bubble guns and a photo booth and crazy stuff.
Okay, Jim. So who's the creative genius? Obviously, you launched the company in the 80s. I mean, where do these creative ideas come from?
Well, we started with Snuba. That was our once we were into the submersibles, we then developed Snuba. I had a couple partners that we started that company.
So scuba merged with what's the
N? Snuba it's a combination of snorkeling and scuba diving.
Oh, snorkeling, okay.
So, or it's an acronym if you want to call it Surface Nexus Underwater Breathing Apparatus. So
okay.
that was a product that we began in 1987, a separate company, but still the principles of Subsea were the same, founders of Snuba. And then SeaTrek came along in 1999. And that has really kind of taken off as a product for us. And we're on five continents, as Hannah says, about 54 locations worldwide.
Wow.
And it's developed now into aquariums as well as theme parks and ocean locations, especially with the cruise lines.
Well, so. Give us an idea of where we, if we wanted to go try out one of your products here, the Sea Track, what theme park would we go to?
Well, SeaWorld has it at Discovery Cove in Orlando. That's a pretty major theme park, a really amazing destination location where they do Sea Trek with stingrays and, you know.
All right, walk me through this. It's a man-made, creative environment. I want to help the audience and myself to understand what this means. Sea Trek, I go to Orlando, I go to Disney.
Well, Discovery Cove is part of SeaWorld.
Oh, SeaWorld, excuse me. Yeah, and I go on the ride, and walk me through the experience.
So this is an experience where it's about a five-minute pre-walk orientation where we do a safety briefing. We make sure that the guests are medically qualified to do it. We don't want people with heart disease or emphysema, certain conditions. And they go down a vertical ladder to about shoulder depth. An attendant uses a lift system that sets the helmet on their shoulders.
So you get your bathing suit on thing, and and you walk
down. So the
down.
Helmet weighs 70 pounds out of water. You don't feel that because you receive the helmet at shoulder depth. They hold onto the helmet till you're fully submerged. And underwater, it only weighs about 15 pounds. So it's enough to make you feel almost like you're on a moonwalking experience. You're about 15 pounds negative. You have really good grip on your walking ability. Mm-hmm. And then we create these trails, you know, whether it's in a natural environment, we create pathways that are, we avoid all the natural elements to protect them.
You're walking around underwater, and somehow it you can breathe. How does the, what's the technology? I mean, and maybe to break it down to like the sea student, how do you keep the air from escaping? Is it?
Yeah, this is, it's so basic. I mean, if you took a glass and just turn it upside down and push it out underwater, it's not going to fill with air. I mean, or with water. Mm-hmm. It's going to stay with that capsule of air. So we pump in about three times as much air as you need into the helmet from either a compressor. We have a backpack system that we supply to all the Atlantis resorts in China and Dubai and in the Bahamas. It's they walk around pillars, so the hoses going to the surface would be a problem. So we're just pumping three times as much air as you need. It exhausts out the back. You're looking out of a large, you know, acrylic viewing lens. And
then so you're walking around underwater. It's basically a swimming pool, but it feels like it's designed so that you it feels very natural.
Well, we're in natural locations. With the cruise lines, we're at almost all the major ports of call, and we're expanding to more right now.
So Cozumel, Aruba, St. Martin.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So they're walking actually in the natural environment, in the ocean. On the sandy seabed.
Wow.
So we create these, in some cases, we create these enhanced environments to take the pressure off the natural reef. So it may be sinking a submersible or a shipwreck or creating, basically, it's habitat for the marine life to hang out. And so
I think about, you know, how many times I've gone out to a buddy's and they want to go diving, but you got to go through this big process to get trained on how to be a diver. And, you know, I'm concerned that I might have claustrophobia when I get down there, and you know I get a headache if I go, you know, hurt your ears to get down too far. And all these things that say, forget it, I don't care. Or maybe you snorkel, and that's a different experience. Here, you're down in the actual ocean, right, and walking around.
Yeah, I mean, Hannah can add her thoughts to this as well. But it's interesting when we started these companies, diving was really popular. Scuba diving was, and it was growing at a rapid rate. And what's happened is now there's so much to do on vacation, not enough time to do it. Everybody wants something instant gratification. And this just perfectly fits with today's society of what they want. It's a short orientation. They do the experience. They buy a T-shirt.
They
love it. It's unique. And a lot of times they go on to scuba dive, but it's convenient.
You get your photo. You got to have a way to share it. Okay, so that product sounds very interesting. Now, the way that we got introduced by a mutual friend and Tim Perkins, in case he happens to be listening, and he talked about an underwater car. Hannah, you want to describe that?
Yeah. So this is one of our newer developments, and so. you know, my dad doesn't sleep very much. And he comes into the office one day, he says, I have this idea. And so, you know, we start with this big dream and we're in development. We engineer, we build test cars. We take it to the local swimming pool to test them out. We have a, you know, test facility. And so the aquatic car experience, as I mentioned earlier, is this underwater ride. So it's two guests. They sit in a submersible car. They're under a breathing canopy. So you're dry from about mid chest up. You can speak to the passenger next to you. You can have a full conversation.
Wow.
The rest of your body, chest down, is in the water. So you'll feel the environment around you. And the cars drive along a track. And the really unique aspect of this system is that the vehicles are powered by air bubbles. It's called a bubble engine. So we're using the uplift force of air bubbles to turn a rotor, which powers the vehicle along the course.
Oh my goodness. And then is this in a swimming pool environment versus the natural?
Yeah, the aquatic car would be devised for a man-made structure. And
these are elaborately created lagoons. I mean, they'll have shipwrecks and, you know, coral reef, which is all artificially created, but full of marine life. So it's a whole marine habitat.
Educational.
Tremendously educational.
Yeah. Interesting. So, okay, so on this, where would I go to ride one of these?
So it's in process.
Okay.
We've been developing, and now it's like building an aircraft because we're having to meet the amusement ride standards. So we're doing all the testing. It's just ongoing. We have an aquarium at our facility in Diamond Springs. So it's just like this last couple of weeks, we've been testing a lift bag system. Even though the top of the roof is only 30 inches beneath the surface, and we have an antenna with a VHF radio so you can communicate with safety staff. If there was a mechanical failure, there could be like 20 cars on the track. We need to be able to lift the car off the track to not impede the cars coming up behind. So we've been testing our inflatable airbag system that raises the car to the surface. But these are the levels of testing that we're going through to meet the amusement ride standards.
Go ahead.
Touch on Jim's point there. The amusement park standards don't really have any standards that fit what we're creating. So we're almost developing these safety standards with them because no one's ever made a car that drives underwater before. So we're very much outside the box when it comes to these, you know, industry safety standards.
You think about the safety aspect, because I mean, I ask entrepreneurs all the time, or I get asked a lot, what keeps you up at night and that kind of thing. And you start thinking about building things that have the ability, if used improperly, or maybe if there was some, mechanical failure or something, you know, it could cause a serious safety issue. I mean, do those kind of things keep you up?
It's huge. That's a huge aspect of what I deal with. It's like aquatic car. Our clients are major clients like Disney, like SeaWorld, like Emar, and I mean, you can go with Miras, all kinds of companies around the world. And so their risk avoidance is extreme. And so that's why we're having to design this with so many redundancies for our safety, that if we can't convince them that it's ultimately safe, that the clients, there is no risk, there's always some risk with anything, they won't buy it. So that's what we're faced with, that's what we're dealing with, and that's what we're, you know, that's what we're satisfying.
And we have a significant proven history with SeaTrek, which has been operating since 99. We do all of the standard operating procedures and train and certify the staff that conduct these tours. So they are fully trained to our standards.
Wow.
And so we're applying that history that we have to this new development.
It does keep me up, though. I mean, we have on staff, we have a marine biologist. His focus is just dive safety. He just works with all of our operations for SeaTrek to assure that we do training, the standards are met. We develop all the standards, we insure the staff. Mm-hmm. So it's all out there, the risk is there. The cruise lines love that though. We're an American company, we have worldwide insurance through an American insurance provider, which is Liberty Mutual. And so they feel comfortable. If there's an issue, they call Diamond Springs. They won't call Barbados or St. Thomas. They usually call straight for us, and then we will do investigations. But you know, we've had a tremendous safety track record. And that's been a huge asset for us.
Well, thinking about there's so much to this that I could take this discussion in a number of directions. I'm going to take it entrepreneurially in a way. This is a family business, and I noticed you called your dad Jim. Once in a while, my son Marcus will call me Mark, and I'm like, just call me Dad. I mean, what's the – anyway, I think that they that Marcus – and I work with my daughter somewhat too, and she always calls me Dad, and then he always seems to call me Mark. So is this like a rule around the office? You got to call me Jim?
Not at all. I flip back and forth, you know, too.
Let me just say one thing, and then you can follow up. I've always felt like my kids, because all three of them work for the company, that they needed to stand on their own feet. And so, you know, unfortunately, my sons have my last name, so I can't hide that. But I love the fact that we go to meetings. I introduce Hannah. And they don't know that she's my daughter.
Wow.
I don't want them to perceive some sort of special treatment because she's my daughter. So I love the fact that she can establish her credibility without my name.
You know? You've got to be proud of that. What about the boys? Are they stand up as...
they do.
Right, so she's the middle child. You got the older one and then the younger one. They're involved in the business as well.
They are. My oldest son is our vice president of production, so he oversees all these five product divisions. He's overseeing the engineering. He kind of takes my crazy ideas and filters them through to engineering. We work together to make sure that, you know, we're not coming up with ideas that are just not capable of producing. So I work really closely with him and testing. And then my youngest son, he's 27. His name's Keenan. He oversees our field operations. So installations for C-Track. He oversees the FunCat production, which is our solar powered catamarans. So he's the youngest. Yeah. He's the one who's really developing, you know, and establishing his territory, so to speak, in the company.
Wow. And Hannah, is your mom involved too?
I was just going to say, you'll let this.
Don't leave her out. Yes.
No, mom's involved too. She's actually our CFO. So she.
Wow. Okay.
She's most important.
Yeah, she's the most important.
Yeah, you got to have the numbers. Okay. So, I mean, I wonder, like, what did you, what's your wife's name?
Melissa.
What did you and Melissa, the person who's most important, it sounds like, what did you do to raise such a, obviously such a driven family, set of children, and but yet the family unity, I mean, this is extremely uncommon. You have to, I mean, I don't know of that many stories like this in many ways, but from a family and success perspective, I mean, you've found a way to sort of bring it all together. The secret?
I think the old adage of leading by example is probably one good point of it. I mean, there's a hard work ethic that goes back to from my parents to us and to our kids, and I think that's passed along really well.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of it is just discipline and focus. You know, if you have an idea, or if you're going to do anything in life, you got to carry through. You know, don't just have these grandiose schemes and they don't come easy and you walk away from them. In our case, we've learned the lessons that you have to work for it. And that's carried on really well to them.
What do you think, Hannah? I mean, how would you, what's been the example that mom and dad have set besides hard work? Because I mean, a lot of us have hardworking parents,
but that
doesn't bring the love together necessarily.
True. I would say valuing our contributions. Everyone brings something to the table. Everyone's respected. Everyone's contributions have value and they're recognized. And it goes beyond just the immediate family as well. All of the employees that work for Subsea Systems, we're like one big family. And, you know, we all work really well together, support each other.
What happens when stuff hits the fan? Because even in the ideal Leave It to Beaver classic family, you know, there's always a time when something goes wrong. How do you deal with like the most frustrating moments?
I almost think it's easier with family because you can be very candid and open and direct with a family member, whereas it may be more difficult with a non-family member. So I feel like our lines of communication are very open with the family. It's always laid out on the table. We deal with things as they come at us. And
yeah, sensitivity training doesn't apply to family discussions, you know?
Yeah, well, that's okay. So to me, this is really interesting and unique and special. But I can't lose sight of the fact that you're building products, you're marketing and selling them all over the world. And it's happening right here in our hometown, right? When when something this unique is happening here in our hometown, and I didn't even know about you guys before, and I'm kind of dialed into this small business community, medium-sized business community, and so I think because of the nature of where your products go, you're kind of like a best-kept secret.
Oh, we like it that way.
Okay,
you know, I mean,
sorry about that. I'm gonna get you out there.
We're up in Diamond Springs. You know, it's a quiet area, and for us, it's great because we offer some workforce opportunities, which maybe wouldn't exist. You know, there's not a lot of production or manufacturing that goes on up there. So, I don't know. It is unusual to be 100 miles from the ocean and create so many ocean-related projects or products. It's kind of funny. I was just thinking about how we've been testing. We did a lot of testing at Cameron Park at the local CSD, the swimming pool. And we'd be pushing the car between aerobics instructors and their, you know, aerobics class, you know, with the car.
What are you guys doing?
But even at Folsom Lake, we did a lot of our, this car, you dry load, it's on a conveyor system, and then it gravity feeds down into the water. That's how it submerges down to the base of the track. And so we had to do accelerated tests from the boat launch. So we were out at
Folsom Lake.
Did you guys go to like Browns Ravine and stuff?
It wasn't Browns. I knew it as 5% or whatever.
Okay, 5%. That's my old hangout when I was in high school. Yeah.
So people were wondering. Well, first of all, as we pull in the gate, they didn't know if they were charging us for a boat or, you know, what is this thing trailered on the truck. So, but we are doing tests, just release tests. We wanted to release it, splash it into the water, and just see how it reacts. Did it lift up? Does it submerge? You know, did we design the body right to keep it embedded on the ground? So we just do some really unusual things like that. But it's, we're in an unusual spot. There's no question about it.
So I'm kind of curious about the passion behind this. It might be different for each of you. So sometimes entrepreneurs want to build businesses that change the world. Other times you want to maybe make some money. I mean, what's the big, reason that you're doing this? This sounds like something that's a family commitment. Is everybody committed for the same reasons, you feel?
Well, I mean, the company, our whole pursuit has been more a pursuit of passion. We love the oceans, and so we're trying to figure out a way, how can we share the oceans? How can we create these products that the common tourists can actually experience what's underneath the surface? Because you go to these great, you know, marine destinations, you look out at the beautiful sunset, the surface of the ocean, you don't realize what there is beneath it. So the problem has been accessibility. And so it's like, for SeaTrek, we have our handicapped adapted program. It's a wheelchair to be able to take paraplegic people who have no walking mobility to take them underwater and explore and see what's underneath the surface. They never have an opportunity without something like this. So it's been a pursuit of passion to find products to essentially share our passion for the oceans. And in a way that there's respect and we have conservation rules with our operations. And, you know, we're trying to have a sustainable business and can share that. And in doing so, there's a lot of responsibility.
Yeah. Well, beyond your dad's views there, Hannah, what's...
To touch on the conservation message, SeaTrek provides, and our other products provide, a great platform to deliver this conservation message. We're very much on the side that you can provide education through entertainment, and it's so much more memorable when you have an experience like that. So a lot of our operators deliver a conservation message. They talk about the local marine life, how your day-to-day activities can impact the ocean, such as microplastics and all of these topics that we are learning about more and more, and their impact on the world. So we certainly appreciate that and try to deliver that message when we can.
So you're go ahead, Jim.
I was just going to say money, you know, when you talk about motivations and why a lot of people get into business, money was really not the central theme of motivation. Obviously, you have to have money to be able to do these. You have to create successful products to sustain or, you know, continue your development. But it wasn't the principal motivation for us. I mean, it's just something you have to have. And I think if you focus too much on it, it's a bigger struggle than just simply focus on producing products that the market wants and know how to deliver the product, not just create it, because that's, as you know, it's like 90% of the effort is after you've created the product. And so for us, it's, I always tell Hannah, you know, we're an innovative company, or we're an innovations company, but we're really a marketing company.
Okay.
And that's been our principal pursuit in business.
Well, yeah. Well, thinking about that, and thinking, you know, as we think about the entrepreneurs who may be listening, or people who are have some big dreams, and boy, I would like to, you know, build a company that makes this kind of difference in the world. But you've got to get the product sold. So your clients are these larger entities, these larger businesses, it sounds like, for the most part. Is your focus on marketing to them, or do you actually help them to market the product as well so that you're actually going to the end user?
It's kind of twofold. Mm-hmm. I mean, at the corporate level, we're certainly marketing B2B, business to business, to gain new operators for our products. But at the same time, we're also doing the B2C side, business to consumer. We're doing brand awareness and education. We definitely use reviews of our product to kind of amplify the C-Trek experience and share about guests' experience when they're on vacation. And all of that feedback is useful, not only for other vacationers, but also for businesses interested in taking on a new product.
Mm-hmm. So big challenges right now. So we have some exciting stuff. So as you look to the future, what big obstacles are standing in your way today? Anything?
Well, you talk about, you know, motivation in business. It's different too for me as a you know, business owner. Now my kids work for the company. I feel this greater sense of legacy and creating some long range products. And so that's really what we're focused on right now. Is C-Trek has been a great product for us since 99. It continues to grow. There hasn't been any moment of saturation. You know, we're still considered, cruise lines are a big segment of our business. And we're a small volume tour operator at each of the ports of call, not like one of these 400 guests doing a beach break. So for us, we have still a lot of room to grow with C-Trek, but I'm always thinking, I'm never quite settled to know that that's enough, not financially, but more in long-term thinking. Mm-hmm. Is that a product that will sustain the business for 20 years out and 30 years out? So now with our children working for the company, I feel a greater sense of responsibility to try to think of products that'll take us into the next 30 years, 10 years, 15 years.
For sure. So once you launch a product, it can last 20 years, 30 years, maybe almost indefinitely.
It can. Even C-Trek, we're probably in our fifth or sixth iteration on helmet design. So we don't rest, even though it's principally a licensing program. We license operators, they run the tours, we provide the insurance and training. And cruise ships, we have customers like the cruise lines that pay for it. But even under that basis, or I should say under that basis, like franchising, there's an obligation. They're paying you a royalty fee every month. You feel a sense of obligation to keep reinventing and improving.
Well, you think too about the transfer of knowledge. I guess it's very doable to transfer knowledge, but transferring what the entrepreneur's the innovative spirit inside an entrepreneur, to transfer that, right? The part of you, Jim, that came up with these things that most people would think were impossible. Is that something that any of the children have innately, or can you teach that to them?
Yeah, I think it's somewhat innate. I think it's also a product of your environment. I think they've picked it up. You know, my kids really understand marketing. A lot of people don't understand marketing, so they really understand that aspect of it. Hannah, that's principally her role, is our brand and our branding and carrying that and getting it out there. She's really effective at it. And so my youngest son, he's probably a lot more like me. He's a bit of more of a salesman personality and real effective in that way. So Kyle, my oldest son, who's our VP production, he's more the tinkerer. He's a mechanic. He loves the machinations of business and production. So they all have their own roles. But I think from marketing and branding, this has been principally Hannah's role, and she's done a great job with it.
Well, this is a tremendous family business story, obviously a story of innovation. And so I'm wondering, you know, we only have a minute or so left, but Hannah, so your vision for the future as you and the two brothers take this baby over, I mean, what can you imagine it being when your dad is in the rocking chair, kicking back, you know, taking, you know, he's more in the spectator role.
Yeah.
What do you imagine?
I mean, certainly big shoes to fill, so some pressure there, but definitely continue innovating. Every time we go out and meet with cruise lines and operators around the world, they always want to know what is new, what's next, what's exciting. Yeah. And so the innovation really is what's going to drive our business and the longevity of our success. So I see that as our greatest challenge.
And we have a VR system. That's kind of our next innovation that we're working on with some technology from a group out of San Francisco.
Nice.
So we're trying to also get into different technologies that still... It still follows along our messaging of trying to get people underwater.
Mm-hmm. But so the car is coming soon. Virtual reality, how many years away before we see something with virtual reality?
Soon. Yeah. Very soon.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. We've already been testing. We've had a really great response to the testing that we're doing. This is a virtual reality. It's a VR headset. It's a mask that uses a Samsung screen.
Mm-hmm. We're not underwater during that.
You're underwater.
We're underwater with a VR headset on.
Yes. Okay. If you can imagine this, this is an acrylic aquarium with.
Because you're already in kind of like virtual reality.
I know.
Yeah.
So
underwater.
We're physically putting you in that environment.
What happens is when you go in the water, your inner ear closes, and we have a lap belt, a buoyancy belt that keeps you prone. You're holding on to this thruster that's. What you're visually watching is synchronized to the thruster. So when you feel speed, the thruster builds up speed. And we're introducing all these effects. And when you're in that zero gravity environment, the sensations, you feel like you're corkscrewing. And your mind is saying, I'm corkscrewing. But we're doing all through special effects and visual and sound. And so this is a system that we're developing right now for water parks.
So cool.
We're working with a company out of San Francisco called Ballast Technologies, and they're the ones that have developed this waterproof VR headset. Mm-hmm. And so we came in, you know, everything on the water side to engineer this system.
And they're doing it now on slides, you know, where four people will be on an inflatable raft going down a 40-second slide ride, and they've developed a headset that... has sensors to sequence and know where you are on the ride, and it's a VR experience.
So. That sounds exciting. I go to Cabo all the time, and I wish you had some stuff in Cabo so that way I could go try it out. But maybe I got to make a trip out to Florida or some of these other, or maybe take a cruise one of these days and go on a cruise line. Which cruise lines are you guys on?
All of them.
All the majors.
Carnival, Royal, Norwegian.
This is an incredible company right down the street. Okay, so one last question. Jim, I'll throw this at you. As you think about the entrepreneurial community, you know, there's a lot of people that would love to fill in those shoes is going to be... a big job. But, I mean, we all, I think, dream of building something that could hold a candle to what you're doing. So if you were advising somebody out there, maybe the next Jim Mayfield that's like, you're early on, maybe some advice to that younger side of you yourself that might be out there today.
Well, I think, identifying the market niches. For us, we're a company, we're so small that big companies won't compete with us, and we're a little bit too big for small garage-up companies to compete with us. So it's finding your market niche. Obviously, you have to find a product that resonates with the consumer. And for us, you know, we're pretty confined to this whole ocean discovery market. It's broad, it's huge, but it's still a small niche market. So I think a lot of it is just finding that niche. Once you've identified it, is do as much as you can to test your thought, your idea, to make sure it resonates. And then it's discipline and focus. It really is.
And
obviously it takes funding too, depending on what you're trying to create. But I think the one key, and I mentioned earlier, is don't lose sight on the marketing. Developing the product, a lot of people spend a lot of money in tooling and creating a final product. And run out of money to introduce it into the marketplace.
Get it to the marketplace a little bit quicker to do your testing.
Find ways to introduce it without the huge investment to at least confirm that you have a product that's sellable.
Yeah.
I think that's key.
Words of wisdom from Jim Mayfield. He brought on his delightful daughter, Hannah DeBee. Thank you for sharing your story. It's unbelievable. I'm so proud to know you, and thanks for what you're bringing to this hometown that I love.
Thank you so much, Mark.
Thanks for having
me. Appreciate it.
Yeah.